This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town. Your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Do you prefer to play or watch sport in the open air, exposed to all of the elements, rain, hail or shine? Or do you like to feel a little protected? So just one of the ideas you've been hearing about today from Greg Tiley for the future of the Australian Open is a tennis dome. So when a dome was first introduced to football, to the AFL, it was controversial. However, now I have to say that I am very comfortable watching the footy, being warm, being dry, out of the wind, not having to wear a flimsy, clear plastic poncho. So given how extreme our weather can be now, is the future of outdoor sport indoor? From rain to sunburn, does the weather stop you from going to the cricket, to the footy or to the tennis? Or is being outdoors a part of the game, a part of watching and just a part of playing sport in Australia? Or maybe you think Craig Tiley is right and we need another dome. And also this hour, would you buy your wedding dress from an op shop? Maybe you already have. Maybe you've donated your wedding dress to an op shop. So I personally have seen a rise of stunning, beautiful, contemporary wedding gowns in op shops, dedicated sections of op shops to wedding attire so that it feels really nice and really separate. So that special dress for just one day is now being passed on to use again. So is that the future?
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So no doubt, as you've been hearing this morning, Craig Tiley from the Australian Open has spoken about some innovative ways to expand the Australian Open, one of those being a dome over the whole precinct that may expand out. He has said it was a way to climatise from rain and from heat. So we do that with Docklands down at the football, down when you watch the footy, when it first came out, we thought that's not footy. When you watch the footy, you go to the MCG, you sit in the rain, you sit in the hail, you sit in the wind. But have you got used to being in a dome? And is the future of outdoor sport indoor? Rory Hyde, Associate Professor at Melbourne University. Rory, I quite like sitting, you know, under the confines of a dome, watching the footy, but being warm, not getting wet, no wind. Is this just the future of how we need to watch sport now?
I wonder. I loved this tournament. I loved seeing these players get challenged in every way. And one of the big challenges is the climate that gets thrown at them. And we can see how that tests their skills in different ways. It also tests us as an audience, as you've said. I went to one of the early matches. It wasn't even that hot that day. It was probably mid-20s, but we were sitting in the sun just thinking, oh, maybe we could watch this on telly.
Yeah.
I think we even left earlier. So I think it's amazing that we have these outdoor events, but I might be with you on team indoor stadium.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think of the dome, I think of footy, and I think of winter. However, now when we talk about extreme weather, heat is a huge part of that. There's already a text that says, I've got two redhead kids. I can't take them to outdoor events in summer. It's impossible to cover them up enough. I have a redhead child as well, and there is not enough sunscreen and hats and long sleeve clothes to get you through, you know, a 5-hour match at the tennis. I mean, given climate change, given how long footy goes now, given how long tennis goes now, do we not need to start thinking realistically around how we design stadiums for shade?
Yeah. I mean, there's probably two things here. Like the big stadiums at the tennis, you can close them, but we keep them open. And I became a sort of semi-expert on this climate rule and when they're allowed to close the roof and so on. But maybe we just need to say, look, it's 40 degrees or it's 30 degrees. Let's close the roof. Let's make it much more tolerable. But then there's the whole experience of going to the tennis and queuing and getting on and off the tram and all the outdoor experiences. So, I mean, it sounds to me, listening to Craig's statements to the media this week, he's talking about the whole precinct, not just the stadiums themselves, but the outdoor zones as well. So, you know, that would, I think, really change the experience of going to the tennis.
How hard would it be, Rory, to design some kind of translucent dome? I mean, it really is futuristic, isn't it? However, we thought that about footy as well with Docklands. But realistically, how tricky would it be to design something like that?
Pretty tricky, I think. Look, we see these big stadiums with the dome over the top. The biggest dome in the world is the National Stadium of Singapore, which has a capacity of 55,000. So it's not as big as the MCG. It's, you know, half the size in terms of capacity. And that's the biggest one. So we see individual stadiums being covered, but precincts is a whole other thing. I will mention an amazing proposal from 1959, the American architect Buckminster Fuller, who is credited with inventing the geodesic dome, proposed a 3-kilometre diameter dome across lower Manhattan. And that was also about climate, but it was about air quality, car pollution. And he wanted to create a kind of island oasis within the city with this huge dome over it. That obviously unbuilt. I think... We haven't quite got the technology to do what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Air quality is an interesting one, though, isn't it, when we look at where we place big stadiums and sporting arenas, how easy they are to get to. But future-proofing stadiums, so we've got the stadium that's been debated for years in Tasmania, for example, what it's going to look like, who it's going to serve, what its purpose is. We do need to think about the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years when we design these big stadiums.
I think looking more broadly, you know, if the goal is to make the outdoor zones more comfortable, the way that we do that at the moment is by a much less technological responses. So planting trees is a really good one. Water features, mists, and you can see that Tennis Australia doing a lot of that already. Reducing paved areas would be major. You've got the heat island effect, where all of that heat from the sun is just contained and then radiated out of the paved areas, making it much hotter in those outdoor public zones. Building canopies, which are still open at the sides, to reduce shade. So there's tons of things we can do, and I think it would make that whole experience more enjoyable too. Imagine planting some really big trees there rather than too much sort of steel and glass, I think, would change the atmosphere.
It's funny that you say that, Rory. I went for a walk on the weekend and it was relatively hot. It was about 30 degrees. And the difference between areas of shade by trees and not, it felt, I kid you not, like a waft of air conditioning every time I got under the shelter of a really large tree. And it was quite confronting. It's like, my goodness, this is what it feels like when you don't have trees and you do have trees. Let's have a chat to Justin, who's in Clifton Hill. Justin, how do you feel going to the footy, going to the tennis, the cricket in extreme weather? Would you prefer to be protected from the elements?
Hi, Rochelle. Look, I'm old enough, a bit older than you, and accept a bit of weather. You've got kids. I don't have that, but I've got very fair skin as well. I worked at the tennis for about 15 years, and I did notice if you took the tram from St Kilda, 25, lovely day, you'd be at Melbourne Park. It could be potentially, if you're in the wrong spot, 35 degrees. If you're in the wrong spot, like your academic expert was saying. But look, I'm old enough to remember, and your listeners would remember, there was footy ovals at where Melbourne Park now is. There was, pastured back in the pre-Rod Laver days, Rod Laver Arena days, there'd be pretty much pastured land, if you like, between the Fitzroy Gardens and the Botanical Gardens. We've filled the same area with bitumen and concrete, like your guest was saying, and really it's just a heat bowl. I'd love to see more Indigenous designers and architects and engineers have a little bit of a footprint. So there was some appreciation that we're not just building palaces to play sport in, and there's a little bit of a feel for what's gone before and a bit of a sympathy with patrons and players, for that matter. I mean, if you look at Rod Laver Arena, if it didn't paint Melbourne on the court for the television viewer, it really could be Doha or Delhi. It could be anywhere. Really?
Yeah, you've raised a lot of really interesting points there, Justin. One, I guess the loss of suburban areas for big matches and big games. I mean, you just take Kooyong. I mean, that's a pretty fancy suburban court, don't get me wrong. However, you look at Fitzroy, Moorabbin, all of these grounds, you know, Waverley, where we used to play sport, that were big matches, but they were in grassier, more shaded areas, Rory. The fact now that we watch a lot of our sport in, as Justin was saying, in the CBD, in highly dense areas, has that got anything to do with just how uncomfortable it can be weather-wise?
Absolutely, exactly. I thought that was a really great comment to reach back for Indigenous ways of working with country, working with the city. You know, that we have the answers. We have the technology, in quotes, if you like, the low-tech answers to these questions. We shouldn't have to reach for roofs and air conditioning and sealing everything off as a response to this. We can rip up the paving where we don't need it. We can introduce water features. We can plant more trees. That's going to have a huge impact on the temperature and the climate. I think it'll still be hot on the court, but, you know, Yannick Sinner's got his sun cream sponsor for that.
Well, this Singapore has a whole botanic gardens under a dome, and that seems to work well. And Wendy says, Rochelle, domes have a place, like for shade, protection at concerts, but please, not everywhere. I go to the footy every week. Give me the weather every time. I love the MCG. I can't stand Docklands. No atmosphere at the footy with that roof. That's from Wendy. Just finally, Rory, there is atmosphere. Wendy, look, I agree, but I just feel like the atmosphere is different when you're in a dome style game versus the MCG. You know, the lights, the music, the atmosphere at Docklands is very different. You can't do that sort of stuff at the MCG. Do you think that we will seriously have to start thinking about domes covering entire precincts into the future?
I think the atmosphere in tennis on the court, when you're watching a very tense point and everybody is silent and you can hear a pin drop, I mean, you don't have to be surrounded by people screaming in order to be engaged and connected to an atmosphere. So put a roof on it. The atmosphere's on the court, and we'll all keep coming back for that, I'm sure.
Good to speak with you as always, Rory. Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle.
See you, Rory Hyde, Associate Professor at Melbourne University. Keep those calls coming in. Do you like the weather? Do you like the elements when you go and watch sport? How do you feel about being in the rain? How do you feel about being in the sun? And does the weather stop you from going to the tennis or to the cricket or to the footy? Coming up next, would you buy your wedding dress from the op shop? Yes, I hit a lot of op shops, so I feel like this is constant market research. I have noticed a huge amount of not just when I say wedding dresses at op shops, you know, there was always the section where there'd be a 1980s puff piece and there'd be some bridesmaids' dresses to go alongside it. I'm not talking about those types of wedding dresses. I am talking near new, stunning, beautiful wedding dresses and entire rows of them, sections of the op shop dedicated to bridal wear for both the bride, for the groom. There's shoes, there's everything. So, is this wonderful? Is this the future? The so-called dress for just one day is being passed on to be worn again. So have you given your dress, your wedding dress, to the op shop? And are you thinking about buying your wedding dress from the op shop? Stuart's called, though, from Mont Albert. Hi, Stuart.
Hi. I think the idea of having, like, roofed stadiums, particularly for the footy, is a bad plan. Simply because we're going to get a new team in Tassie. They'll have their home games, and it'll be like playing in Docklands.
So you think it's a bad idea? You don't like it?
Yeah, I think it's a bad idea, because if we don't have if we don't have individual stadia, which have different characteristics, points, bit of a home and away run.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the footy, I guess there are those who are of the belief that you're not match fit until you're MCG mat fit, that if your home games are at Docklands, then you're not used to the elements. So what happens when it pours down rain? Good on you, Stuart. Thank you. But up next, would you buy your wedding dress from the Op Shop? Maybe you have. And have you given your special dress to the Op Shop?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So, yes, regular listeners would know I hit an Op Shop or two, you know, every week, let's just say. I know, it's an addiction. I can't help it. I just pop in. You never know what you'll see. 10 minutes is all you need. However, I have noticed a huge and wonderful trend of wedding dresses and entire bridal sections popping up at many local op shops in many different suburbs. Even signs out the front saying, you know, new wedding dresses, more gowns, sections where you can sit down, try them on, little seats. There's bridesmaids' dresses. There are shoes, you name it. And the areas look beautiful. Jai Marshall is a fashion designer and a fashion lecturer at Swinburne University. Jai, the idea of something old, something borrowed, something blue, I don't know, whatever the saying is, but the idea of having that special dress that you only wear once and then you keep it in your cupboard forever and do nothing with it, I feel like more and more women are donating their wedding dresses and I'm there for it.
Absolutely. I think this is just such a great trend. We've really started to see recycled and upcycled bridal dresses coming in. It has been kind of slow to gain popularity. So last year we still had around 75% of brides kind of still buying an off-the-rack brand new wedding dress. But we have started to see about 10% of brides starting to purchase secondhand dresses and also grooms from the op shop, which is just fantastic. I think there's so much pressure around sustainability, particularly within the wedding industry, because it's so much fabric, it's so much energy just for one dress or one garment to only be worn once.
Jai, stay with us. Jackie's in Bendigo. Hi, Jackie.
Oh, hi. How are you going?
Did you get your wedding dress at the op shop?
No, I didn't get my wedding dress in the op shop. But what I did with it was dye it afterwards. So I sent it off to professional dyers. And I've got a blue dress that I wear quite often.
Oh, I love that idea. Yeah, love did you that. Know that when you, at the time, Jackie, did you think, right, I can dye this a different colour and wear it again?
No, I held on to it for like years and years, as you do, and thinking I'd wear it or convert it. But when I realised that there were professional dyeing services out there, I took the risk and it paid off.
Jackie, I love the idea of giving your dress a second life, whether that be dyeing it or giving it to the op shop. I just wonder, you know, whether or not people are thinking twice about donating it, or whether that we live in a sustainable world now. We think, Jai, as you were saying, differently about fashion, what it costs, not just financially, but what it costs to the environment, and why hold on to it. I think there's something lovely about passing it on. Jai?
Absolutely, yeah. It's. I think that conversation there was great around the dyeing of the dress. Mm. We actually have seen a huge intake of brides choosing a non-traditional colour. So instead of going for that white jewel look, choosing something a little bit more understated or going for a different colour. I think having a dress that's going to have a second purpose is so much better. I mean, the amount of fabric that goes into a wedding dress is incredible, and being able to get more use out of that is even better. I think, you know, today we do have a lot of sustainability pressures, and once upon a time, the everyday consumer wouldn't really think about that because the making of a wedding dress is so disconnected from us now. I think once upon a time, a lot of people would get a wedding dress custom made, where now they're just taking it off the rack and getting a few alterations. So I think the fact that we're really thinking about the impact that these wedding dresses are having on the environment is really excellent.
I haven't donated mine. I'm one of those who, mine wasn't very fancy actually, it was just off the rack. I had the idea of wearing it again, however, I never have. But I think if I was to donate it to an op shop, I would want to put a little note in there that says, if you purchase this as your wedding dress, can you please take a photo of yourself in it and send it back to me? Like, I'd want to know what happens to it. I'd want to see where it ends up.
Absolutely. We have seen a bit of an increase in daughters picking up their mother's wedding dresses and turning it into a reception dress. So using it after the wedding and having that kind of family passed down tradition, which I think is quite great. People generally tend to buy cut garments or dresses that don't kind of tell the test of time. So it's great to see some of these garments being passed down. I think that's what fashion's all about. Some of these garments and wedding dresses take many hours to make, and to just wear it for one day is just unsustainable.
Michael's in East Doncaster. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Rochelle, how are you?
Really good. What did you want to say?
My son and his girlfriend had a debutante 2 years ago, and the dress that his girlfriend liked was so expensive, and she was so upset that she couldn't afford it. So we found one for $99 at Savers. And then my friend Joanna tailored it for it to be exactly what she wanted.
Oh, love it.
So she was, for 2 months at my house, on a small coffee table, 8 foot in the air. It was the most gorgeous thing. And we ended up with something far more valuable than the dress that she was ever going to buy.
Yeah. And what I've noticed, Michael, in the op shops in particular, is once if there was a secondhand wedding dress donated to an op shop, it was decades old, and it would have had big puffy sleeves and lots of lace, which sounds fabulous, by the way. I'd probably wear that. But they were really old, Jai. What I'm seeing now is really contemporary, really bougie. And not only that, the op shops are creating these little sections where you can go in, and it sort of feels special. It feels nice, and you can enjoy the moment too. You're not kind of just rummaging through looking for a bargain. There's a vibe attached to it. So the secondhand stores are really embracing this.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a much broader cultural shift around weddings, particularly in Australia. They're becoming a little bit more casualized, and therefore the need for a big white puffy dress is no longer. There's some of these really great sexy modern wedding dresses that people are happy to pass on because they're more so invested about the event and less about the garment that they're wearing. Yes, it might get a few social media photos, but people are happy to pass down and help a friend out. And I think some of these op shops, as we've spoken about before, really do an excellent job at visual merchandising.
Yeah.
I think over the past couple of years, it's really increased. And even so much to the point that I had a friend saying today that, they're going to have to go pay for entry into an op shopping event because it's just so grand.
Yeah, the visual merchandising, you're right. And I don't know whether it's the volunteers who are doing it or whether they're bringing people in, but they have really upped their game. And you reminded me, Jai, that I made my debutante ball in year 10. So that would have been, 1990 or something. And I found the best wedding dress, 1970s big batwing sleeves. And that was my deb dress. But Michael's in Kilsyth. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, g'day, Rochelle. I bought my wedding suit about 20 years ago at the local Salvos, and 20 years ago, I think you could get better bargains, but it was a dollar, and it had been reduced half price to 50 cents, and it was a Hugo Boss suit.
Yeah,
it was almost in perfect condition. It was fitted me perfectly, but the legs were a little long, so I got them shortened, and that was it. And I look fine. I still have it.
The fact, and you still have it, 50
yep.
cents.
Yes.
I've met my match, Michael.
Well, I don't mind talking about it now. I'd sort of whisper about it, but if it had looked crap, I wouldn't have bought it.
No.
It looked really good. And, so.
And have you ever thought about passing it on?
Look, I'm getting a little fatter, so I might end up giving it to the off shop. But no,
giving it back. No. I love that.
I can still fit in it just.
I love that. I love it when I give something back to the op shop and then I go to that op shop and I go, oh, that looks okay. And then I realise that it's actually mine. Helen's in Hawthorne. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Rochelle. How are you going? Hi, Jay.
Hello.
What did you want to say, Helen?
What did I wanted to say? So I'm an ex-bridal designer. I've just finished. My name's Helen Manuel. I've just finished studying at RMIT, Bachelor of Fashion, focusing on sustainability. And I just wanted to say how fabulous this discussion is, because, you know, it's really important that we don't keep adding textiles into landfill. And so the more that we can encourage our brides, our friends, our, you know, our neighbours to be buying secondhand, and there's some really awesome frocks out there, and menswear, there's some great op shops that have got sections that are curated, and, you know, they've got amazing designer garments in there. So I really applaud this fabulous discussion that you're having today.
I agree, Helen, and I actually did applaud a couple of the women in this op shop that I went into, and I said, you guys have just done the most incredible job. Like, it felt so special, because I guess fundamentally that's what you want. You want a special experience, and that doesn't mean that it has to be expensive. It doesn't mean it has to come at a cost to you or to the environment. So
exactly, and there needs like a bigger picture about this. What is it about? Why do we think that we need a brand new dress every time? As long as it's new to us, and it makes us feel amazing. And what we really have to question here is the value. What importance do we put on this garment?
Yeah, and I love the idea of somehow passing on the story so you get to see who wears it. There's some lovely, good on you, Helen. Thank you, and well done finishing your studies. Jai, just finally, there's a couple of texts coming in of people passing down, so not to the op shop, but one like this. It says, forget the op shop, I wore my mother's 1941 wedding dress, which had originally been her aunt's. And another that says, my sister wore her mother-in-law's dress, and then her daughter wore the same dress, so three wears over 80 years. And another that says, who wears big puffy sleeve dresses as wedding dresses these days? Or I reckon that looks back in. But my mum married in 1947, a dress quite similar to my own in 1977. Both could have been worn by the same women wanting to look elegant. Jai, in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to talk Grammys. So, of course, musically, you know, who's won, who hasn't, how the Aussies are faring. But it's a big moment for fashion as well. Have you spotted anything good, anything nasty?
Yeah, it's going to be a really great event this year. I think I'm particularly excited to see, you know, Lady Gaga. She's almost guaranteed to serve some, you know, new chapter of fashion inspiration. And then someone like Sabrina Carpenter, always, you know, running a bit of a portable art gallery. I think the great thing in particular about the Grammys is that it's less about trends and more about them showing their personality. And I think it's just a great red carpet to watch. I think, you know, it's always really hard to trend predict and forecast for the Grammys. However, I do think we're going to see a lot more kind of romantic attitude this year on the red carpet.
And a couple of Australian fashion designers too. That, I mean, we're talking Australian music, but I have noticed so far a couple of Australian fashion designers with some big names wearing their labels.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And in particular, we've got some Australian artists in there this year as well, which is exciting. And I always think it's so great that, you know, Australia is so geographically displaced, but it's so great that we always serve on red carpets.
Thank you, Jai. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much.
See ya. Jai Marshall is a fashion designer and fashion lecturer at Swinburne University. Are you thinking about giving your wedding dress to the op shop? Maybe now you're a little inspired to go into that cupboard in the second room and take it down to the op shop. Have you purchased your wedding dress from the op shop? But staying on architecture, there has been an ongoing debate for a long time now on whether or not we renovate or detonate our public housing towers. However, the focus on this particular tower, this is the Barclay Street housing estate, this tower was purpose-built in the early 1970s, and it was purpose-built for older singles and older couples. And a report's just been done by RMIT University that has found that they believe that that particular tower should be upgraded, that it shouldn't be demolished. The report co-author is Karen Decker from RMIT School of Property Construction and Project Management. There's constant debate, Karen, around whether or not we should renovate, whether or not we should pull down and start again. Why did you take a look at this particular housing estate, the Barclay Street housing estate?
Yeah, really, because the people from Marybeck came to us and said, hey, this tower might be redeveloped, and would you be able to work with us to see if we can find some evidence if renovation is potentially possible. And the other reason that we focused on this tower is that there's a big echo in my voice.
Oh, is that? Okay. We might just pop you on hold and see whether or not we can fix that.
Yeah, okay.
We'll pop you on hold. You're listening to report co-author Karen Decker from RMIT's School of Property, Construction and Project Management. And we're looking at the particular towers, the Barclay Street Housing Estate. So this tower was purpose-built in the 1970s and it had a focus on older singles and older couples. And the report that they've done has concluded that it would probably be better to renovate rather than to pull down and to rebuild these particular towers. If you know the towers I'm talking about and you'd like to comment, our number's 1300 222 774. Karen, hopefully this is better for you now. So you were saying that the second reason why you looked at this particular tower was?
Well, the reason was that we think that the government should really show that they have done the research on all those towers. And we wanted to showcase that it can be done, that you can do the cost and carbon calculations, that you can take the ideas of the residents into consideration when you redevelop the towers. And we also just wanted to find out if it could potentially be cheaper to retrofit rather than to demolish and rebuild.
So will this be listened to? And I say this with the utmost of respect, but we have been debating whether or not to renovate or to pull down for some time now. And even if the results come back to say, yes, absolutely, we should renovate, there is a purpose in these. They still have life in them yet. It means that people won't be disconnected from their community, from their village, that people will stay connected. What will make this report different? Like, will the government listen? Will those with any power listen to what you've discovered, do you believe?
I'm not sure. I can't look into their heads. But at least we've now got the evidence, and that is the thing that is lacking from what the government is doing. So rather than saying, they have reached their end of life and it will be very costly to retrofit, we have now shown that it can be cheaper and better for the environment, so lower carbon calculations if you retrofit and add infill on the same site. So we are providing the evidence that the government is not providing.
How do the residents feel about this? Because I know that you spoke with residents as well as experts from all different areas of the housing sector. How do they feel about this?
About the outcomes of the report?
Yeah.
Well, they're kind of happy with it, but at the same time, they are older residents. So for them, the Barclay Street Tower is not on the list for the next tranche. For them, life just goes on and they're like, yeah, we'll see what happens in the future. But they were very pleased to see the designs that we showed them initially, and they also gave us the feedback on those designs, and they were very keen to see the tower to be redeveloped rather than demolished, because if it gets demolished, they need to move. And at the same time, they are saying the tower needs, better maintenance, and the elevators need to work all the time, and it needs to be safer and cooler in summer and warmer in winter, that kind of thing.
The age of the residents, does that come in to, the focus of them being older, sometimes being single as well. How much of that comes into the research that's being done?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did was that we looked at we interviewed the residents and everybody that looks after them, and we looked at the potential cost of relocation, and it's very hard to put an actual dollar figure on it. But the fact that these are so old makes it very hard to move them to another location, because they've got their social networks there, they've got their access to healthcare facilities, they've got their trusted social workers and support workers. So if you move those people, there are actually calculations that show that a certain percentage of the people won't be able to survive the move because they are too fragile, too old. They often have mental health issues. Yeah.
Good to get your thoughts on this. Thank you so much. Professor Karen Decker from RMIT School of Property Construction and Project Management. Keep your messages and images coming in as well. A beautiful picture of a bride and groom here exiting the church on their wedding day. We're talking about whether or not you've bought your wedding dress from an op shop. Would you give your wedding dress to an op shop? Because I've been doing a little bit of research, accidental research, and have noticed some incredible wedding dress sections and dedicated areas and window displays and signs promoting beautiful wedding garments. This, Rish, recently my son and now daughter-in-law were married. He in a secondhand Japanese designer jacket and trousers, and she in a vintage wedding dress. It was just brilliant. That's from Stephen in Camberwell, and they look gorgeous. And this from Janine in Hepburn Springs, Dolce & Gabbana raw silk 1980s suit. I've kept it, but there was a small little stain on the front. I've painted a delicate flower to disguise it, and I wore it to a family wedding and then to Christmas events. Great success. Janine, love everything about it. Keep your calls coming through as well on whether or not you would prefer to watch sport. Doesn't matter if it's cricket, tennis, footy, if you would prefer to watch it in the comforts of a dome or out in the elements.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Well, the Grammys are underway as we speak, and there are a handful of Aussies that are up for some pretty big awards. Neil Griffiths, the editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone Australia and New Zealand. Neil, it's just so fun to watch, to not only watch what people are wearing, but also to watch some of the performances and to see who's there. What's happened so far? Any big knockouts? Any big surprises?
Yeah, good morning. Happy Grammys Day.
Happy Grammys Day.
we just had about 2 hours of pre-ceremony happen, and the big dance is about 50 minutes away from starting. We had three Australians up for awards this morning, Amel and the Sniffers, Tame Impala and Rufus Du Sol. We have had a win with Tame Impala, which is very exciting.
Wow. And was that expected?
Yeah, look, he was up for Best Dance Electronic Recording with End of Summer, which is off his new album, Deadbeat. He, funnily enough, won the same category last year, but that was a collaboration with famous duo Justice. This year, however, this is his first win, or their win, rather, as Tame Impala. So really, really exciting. Obviously, Amel and the Sniffers are one of Australia's biggest bands right now. They were up for Best Rock Performance. They lost out to Youngblood. And Rufus Du Sol were also up for Best Dance Electronic Album, but they lost to FKA Twig. So, look, one from three is not bad.
Absolutely. Does it make a difference, like, if you win or not? I mean, is a nom enough to get you the meetings that you want to have, to get the record sales that you want?
Yeah, look, I mean, award shows can be quite superfluous. You know, sometimes it's obviously great to be nominated. It doesn't necessarily mean that you are or are not a good act, in the same way that with Academy Awards. You know, there are plenty of wonderful actors who have never been nominated, or some who have been nominated a million times and never won. So, yes, it's a flex. You can say you're a Grammy-nominated band or artist, but by no means does it mean that, you know, you are good or bad.
Can I ask a really stupid question? Where do the noms come from? Is it industry? Is it public?
Yes, yeah, so the association do it. Yeah,
it's the association. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so it's going to get you some meetings with some big wigs.
You'd like to think so, yeah, for sure. I mean, Amel and the Sniffers, just singling it out for a second. Obviously, last year was massive for them. They were, funnily enough, on the cover of Rolling Stone Australia. They performed at Coachella and Glastonbury as well. They've just supported AC/DC on that stadium tour. They're doing really big things in the US, which is great to see. Tame Impala and Rufus Du Sol have really been on the US map for quite some time. So, you know, back to the early question about was it expected? With Tame and Rufus, probably. With Amel, it wasn't necessarily expected, but it's showing how big they're coming up, particularly in the States.
Neil Griffiths is with you, Editor-in-Chief of Rolling Stone magazine and New Zealand. Hey, stay with us, Neil, because I'm going to have a chat. Charles Jenkins has just called in. I'm presuming, is this musician Charles Jenkins?
Yes, sorry. I'll just get you off speaker. Hello. Hello.
Hello, Charles.
Hello. My
what made you call us?
Dobbed me in. Because my son, Henry Jenkins, is in the Fallon Music Library, along with Hudson Whitlock and David Thorff, good old Princess Hill Melbourne boys. And they're a part of the Leon Thomas album, which won Best R&B Album at the Grammys this
morning. Oh, happy Grammys days to you. That's incredible.
Very, very good. So, yeah, they're very, very proud, and their beautiful mothers are all very proud. So, yeah, it's a great day.
So you can now say that your son is a Grammy award-winning artist.
I am saying it right now. Yes, it's great to be able to say that. So yeah, all their friends are very excited. They've worked very hard. So it's they're in LA at the moment, so they're having a wonderful time.
And what are you doing, Charles? Have you just been watching it on telly?
I've just got a message from Henry this morning saying that they won, or that Leon Thomas album won. And I've just been watching it all on Instagram, kind of unfold. And my bandmate said you should call in to the ABC. So, yeah.
Oh, Charles, thank you so much. You must be so proud. So what's next for your son? Sorry, what was your son's name again? Henry.
My name is Henry, and then his bandmates Hudson and David, who are both, they're all a part of the Fallon Music Library. They play in a band called Karate Boogaloo here in Melbourne. And so what's next? Well, they're in LA soaking up the award today, and then they're working in a studio with producers and other musicians as we speak.
And does it make a big difference, Charles? I mean, given you're a musician yourself as well, does it make a big difference having these accolades, having these awards?
I hope it will. I mean, it's a wonderful, it's just a beautiful, fun thing, and a good recognition of all their hard work. And I think it will. I think it will give them a little bit of kudos, with certain people. I'm not entirely sure, if they're able to monetize it, in want of a better word. That's a terrible word, but I'm just hoping that it's just a good recognition, a beautiful recognition of all their work.
Oh, Charles, enjoy the moment, and thank you so much for calling through and telling us. There you go, Neil. We've just spoken to, that's like our 6 degrees, right, of being at the Grammys, pretty much.
That's a scoop is what that is. Well done. And it's very exciting too. Leon Thomas, a fantastic artist. He's actually touring Australia in a couple of months. So, yeah, that's awesome to see. Congrats to the team.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Just quickly before we let you go, Neil, Kendrick Lamar, 38 years of age. I think he's got like 9 nominations. How many of those? He'll be breaking records if he wins them all. How many do you think he'll take away?
Yeah, so he is up for 9, which is the most of any artist on the day. I believe he only needs 4 more awards to beat the all-time record for a rapper, which is Jay-Z. Look, if you're going to be conservative, I would say he's probably going to at least win 4 today. He's up for a couple of awards, Song Record of the Year, of course, the big one, which is Album of the Year, and another artist as well who just toured Australia. He's fantastic live. He's probably one of the greatest rappers of all time, and that's some of the greatest rappers of all time have said that the Kendrick really is carrying the baton for rap music in 2026.
Isn't that incredible, given that he was in Ballarat, a couple of months ago?
Exactly right. Yeah.
And I don't know why this got my attention, but it did. But this is Justin Bieber's first time back to the Grammys in quite a few years. I don't know why that interested me, but for some reason it did. Is it a big deal that Bieber is back?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's very clear you're a believer, which is great to hear.
Thank you. I'm not, but yeah.
This is his first time back on stage. He'll be performing today. This is his first time back on stage in 4 years. Of course, he's up for a couple of awards. I believe 4 is the correct number on the back of his last album, Swag, as well. So, yeah, it's great to see Bieber in the headlines for the right reasons now.
Is there anyone in particular that you're hoping will get a Grammy?
Look, I obviously had my heart set on the 3 Australian acts, so it's good to see Tame got one. I mean, like I said, I think Kendrick is going to win a lot here. 9 out of 9 is probably a big call, but I would be shocked if he won less than 3. The other big ones today, Lady Gaga, who's up for 7.
Bad Bunny's just keeps going. 6. God, I love her.
Yeah, she's incredible. And yeah. Again, 7 nominations. I think she'll at least win a couple here. Again, she's up for the big ones as well, Album, Song and Record of the Year. Bad Bunny will be here in a matter of weeks, actually. And he should do some big business today as well. So very exciting to see. And, it's tough to say who, but look, I think if be conservative, Kendrick is going to win a lot today.
Well, I just feel so out of the loop. So you keep me up to date. Neil, thank you. I'll let you get back to the telly.
Thanks so much.
See ya. Neil Griffiths, Editor-in-Chief of Rolling Stone Australia and New Zealand. Goodness me, you are sending me some beautiful images of op shop and vintage wedding dresses. Rish, my daughter, got married last year. She got her wedding dress secondhand online from America. It's beautiful and it fitted her like a glove. Oh, absolutely. Keep those coming through. You can text them through 0437 774 774. We started today's program by talking about whether or not we need another sports dome here. Would you like a tennis dome? We have a footy dome. Do you want to watch your outdoor sport indoor? I wanted to know what Ed Wyatt, sports journalist, thought about this. Ed, given you straddle the worlds between the States and Australia, stadium sports, will we just start, is that the future, covered roofs to protect us from all of the elements of the Australian climate?
Good morning. Well, look, I think we've talked about this before, the idea that sports becoming entertainment, and that's becoming a big part of it. So I don't know if it's completely the future, but it certainly is a big part of the future. We've seen it in a lot of different places. And look, the Australian Open's probably gone as far as it can go, right? We've had talks about how crowded it was and all the it's been so successful, but it probably makes sense to kind of open things up a little bit. But whether that includes a dome or not, I'm not sure.
And I wonder whether the entertainment aspect comes in to putting a roof on, putting the walls in, putting those sound barriers in. Because as I was saying earlier, the experience between the MCG and Docklands is very different. I'm not saying one is better than the other. But they're very different. And Docklands, there's more music, you know, there's more visuals, whereas the MCG, there's more footy. So yeah. I guess it depends on what you're building the place for.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it depends on the sport as well, too, right? So if you look at footy, American football, I mean, I am an old school guy. I believe those are meant to be played outdoors, just kind of the way I like to enjoy that. If you're talking basketball, obviously that's an indoor sport. Tennis kind of, I guess, can straddle the line a little bit. They do have an indoor season. They have outdoor majors, obviously, but there are roofs now for inclement weather. So it's an interesting one. I think the entertainment side of it with the Sphere in Las Vegas that you talk about, that's kind of revolutionized things a little bit. They're talking about putting a smaller Sphere in around Washington, D.C. So, I think it's going to be something that will come to Australia at some point, without a doubt.
It's got real Tina Turner, Mad Max, Thunderdome vibes about it, doesn't it?
I'm a big fan of the Mad Max series, so I got you right.
Oh, exactly, two men enter, one man leaves. About. You know, that's it.
Indeed.
Ed, thank you.
No worries at all.
Ed Wyatt, sports journalist, 5 minutes away from midday. Did you give your wedding dress to an op shop? Have you just noticed your local op shop really embracing bridal couture? And maybe you're thinking about buying your wedding dress from the op shop. And is this the ultimate type of sustainability? Mark's in Glen Iris. Hi, Mark.
G'day, how are you?
Really well.
I'm going through my mum's estate. I've got her wedding dress somewhere that I've got to dispose of, and maybe even her mother's too.
But this is some. So you think you'll give it to the op shop?
Yeah. I've got to go through stuff and get rid of it.
Oh, that's a stressful thing to do, isn't it?
She was 96, so that's a while ago. So we got married in a Maranoa Botanic Gardens in Baldwin. So we just had a nice ceremony. My wife dressed up in two pieces she picked up from op shops, but they weren't a wedding dress looking thing. But and I wore my father's tails pants because they fitted me on the waist, but my grandfather's tails top was more suitable for my size chest, and my godfather's top hat.
Oh, beautiful.
Which was a little bit small on the head, but that's all right.
That's all right.
It was the principle of the thing. And so we had a lovely ceremony there.
Oh, I'd love the fact that you're in a top hat. You sound like you look incredibly dapper, Mark. Thank you. And best of luck with dealing with your mum's estate.
We have a good op shop up in the country where I live.
Where?
Dookie.
Yeah, okay.
Between Shep and Vanilla. Oh. And it's actually more a men's op shop because it's got a lot of military stuff in it.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting.
So it's a good blend.
All right. I like a good tip. Well. Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Weekends only.
Good on you. I love a weekend only. A weekend only op shop out the back of a church. Whew, that's where you find the good things. Rochelle, here's me as a bridesmaid in 1990 and my daughter's graduation back in 2017. Same dress, just slightly altered. That's from Mel. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.